everybody. Welcome to the Brain Trust Podcast. My name is Adam Vass, and I'm a tabletop game designer in Southern California.
My name is Lev. I'm a tabletop game designer in New York, Ontario, Canada. What's going on?
Just having the huge, just living.
We're doing a huge one. Do you remember how hot, like, extreme lugeing was in the early aughts?
No, I mean...
Street luge.
Hmm.
Did that hit you?
I don't think so. I mean, I remember seeing it on the X Games, maybe. But it's one of those things that admittedly takes skill, and it just, like, still, no matter what you do, it'll never feel like a sport, you know?
Unlike... You know, ice luge, which is basically like I'm going on a go-kart track. You know, there's no skill in ice luge. Like, you're basically on rails there. That's the equivalent of a train. You're like, wow, the train did such a good job getting to the station.
The train, like, has a conductor, I guess.
Yeah. But I like street luge. I like a lot of... I like people that like longboard down big hills. I like any sport that the goal is to get the skin off your body as fast as possible.
Yeah. And any percent skin removal.
You can do a lot worse than street luge. Basically, you are a millimeter from the ground. Your head is really close to the ground. There's someone on TikTok that like longboards, bombs down hills, actually rollerblades downhills with one foot, and it's just like, what, with no helmet, and it's like, this is for clout and you will die doing this. Respect.
It's some grizzly man energy of like,
yeah,
I know what I'm doing.
I would love if Werner Herzog went to like the X Games and commentated the street luge portion. Now here's what that would sound like, and then one of us would do our Werner Herzog impressions.
Oh, I wish we were recording when that happened. It was very funny and pure. There must have been a technical error.
Our impressions were so good. There was this weird blip. Anyway, luge. We're doing the huge. You know, I just got a new toy. I got a little like emulator Game Boy kind of thing that comes like preloaded with tons of games. It's questionably legal, but I do have the original games for all of this, so I'm allowed to use the ROMs. You know, like I do have the original game for Electrosperm, which is a game that's on there. So I've been playing a lot of a game called Electrosperm, which is a Chinese translation of something. I'm not sure.
Who could forget the classic? Yeah, I don't know. I've been just, what have I done?
What have you done?
I'm at the end of my, enjoyment of Hades.
Nice. What have you felt the twilight was for you in that game?
So, I have a weird, I mean, I don't think this is weird. I think this is what games kind of feed. But I love, like achievements that are not hidden.
Oh, that stuff is great.
So Hades has the prophecies, and that really drove me for a long time. Even of like, I had finished the story and I was working towards the epilogue, but I was delaying pursuing the epilogue because I had all these prophecies I wanted to fulfill. And, it got to a point where I reached the epilogue kind of not trying to, like just by doing these prophecy cycle runs.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I've been really impressed. And one thing I want to say we don't need to review the best reviewed video game.
Respect to Hades and the team at Supergiant Games.
There's so much fresh dialogue, like despite you having the same interactions dozens of times, I never really feel like it repeats, and that's impressive. Yeah. Just
shit feels like game mastered, like in that way.
Right, really cleverly. Like there just must be so many lines of dialogue for every character to prevent that feeling of reiteration. Even if once you get to a point and the story's not progressing anymore. You still have like just like small talk dialogue that doesn't repeat. I'm sure eventually it would, you know, but I'm not going to play that long to find out.
So right,
it got to the point where in pursuing the prophecies, I just wasn't really enjoying it anymore. And I think that's fine. And I think this is the most cognizant I've been of it in any video game, but they're especially open world games or games that just don't end, roguelikes. There just comes a point where I stop playing it, and that's
right.
Its own ending. And I feel like Hades, obviously I didn't do everything. It's not 100%, but like I'm not really interested in pursuing the things that are still there. And so I'm good. Just like, let's walk away from one another.
I'm playing a game called Risk of Rain 2, which is a little nice roguelike 3D shooter that I've just been playing like in the morning before work or in the evening or just whenever I get a little break, because it's, you know, takes like half an hour to, you know, 90 minutes to play. And that game has achievements, but it's in the form of secret unlocks. So you do not know what the thing you'll unlock is, but you know the category. So like you have access to one character in the beginning and you can get all these other characters, but you don't know what they are, but you do know the circumstances by which you can unlock them. And they're all tied to different game progression stuff. And each character then has unlocks for it's different. There are different like weapon abilities or cool things that are all tied to doing cool things with that character. So one is like kill 15 enemies while hovering in the air. And I saw that before playing that character and I was like, wow, how would I do that? And it just like made me kind of construct a situation in the game where I could do that. Or it was like kill a boss in with one big blast of damage. And I was like, damn, I don't think I can do that, but like, let's see if I can. And so it's the same way we've talked on this podcast before about how, oh my God, what's the name of that game? It's the thing we extracted dares from.
Dead Cells?
Dead Cell. No. Yeah. Dead Cells?
Yeah. The roguelike game that.
Yes. So Dead Cells has this thing where you can do an optional challenge run for each level, and it will give you a benefit for doing that. So you can shoot for it. You don't have to do it, but it's something to keep in the back of your head. And I really like that kind of like qualitative progression stuff where you're like, I know that I can do this thing and I can go for it. And it changes the way I play a little bit. So I have this kind of meta goal. Like playing the game is fun, but I have this goal that's above this play of the game so I can play other games differently in this system. It's cool. It's been making me think a lot, and it sounds like prophecies give you stuff to do, but doesn't have like a mechanical conversation with you as a player.
Sometimes it'll be like reach the surface with this aspect of this weapon. And also I'll say, you know, like, oh, that's not my favorite weapon, but now I got to do this. And just even the flavor pretense of like, the fates have written in their book that this will happen, and you then make them true. It's psychologically a fun like chicken and egg. Like they wrote it in their book, so I, as the player, decided to make it true because they said it was true. But yeah, the narrative hook there is fun, and that's also part of the reason that I enjoyed that aspect of the game a lot, because a lot of them early on were narrative focused. Like, I don't want to spoil stuff, but like find a way to reunite these two characters. And there's not any information on how to do that. And it just sort of reveals itself through long-term play.
And you get a story reward. Like you get to see that happening. This is making me think of a legacy RPG. So an RPG that grows as you play it, that you have a like basic resolution system to do stuff. Say it is climbing a mountain and there is like paragraphs of blacked out text and you only see the placeholder text that's like, this is unlocked when you get to the top of the mountain. And maybe that's like the skiing rules. So then you ski down or whatever. So you have these like different like progression gated mini games that the game is built from that you work to unlock, and it's kind of like an open world. It's like a sandbox rule system in that you go to the rules that interest you most and they get more expansive and weird and cool. So like if you wanted, it's this thing where a lot of sci-fi games will be like, you can do everything. You can be a pirate or a merchant or what's another thing in space? A miner, a smuggler, a frigging rock star. And games like Traveler or whatever, that's just going to be my example here, get bogged down with the collision of a lot of those systems. So like a merchant isn't going to really need to know about warp times the same way that a scout will, but they will have to use those rules. But if I was playing the space game and I wanted to go all scout, I would just get the nice granularity in those rules and I wouldn't really have to worry about shooting. So the rules for shooting would be really simple because I don't shoot people. I go to cool black holes.
Yeah, this is a game we've designed actually a couple times on the show.
Damn it.
We did the like fantasy mini zine collection where like each class or playstyle would have a different mini zine and it would be immersive in that way. Like the box would collect it. Game Island is kind of this too, of like a mechanical support for...
We've designed this style.
Yeah. The sandbox with sort of optional focuses.
This is like literally the rules text doesn't exist until you finish a thing inside of the narrative of the game. So I'm actually very original.
Well...
Ship it.
Go back and listen to every episode of the Brain Trust podcast. You'll find it. I don't know. Don't have much this week. I like that we're on this sort of de facto bi-weekly thing. And at least in my head, I'm like, wow, I'm going to have 2 weeks of ideas stored up, ready to rock. I think if anything, it makes me less hyped. Like, there's no momentum or something. I don't know. I just don't have any thoughts. Then we do the show, and I'm like, okay, bud, time to start thinking.
Well, I think definitely going through it doesn't help.
Right.
We had some suggestions this week we could talk about.
Did we?
Yeah, I asked in the Brain Trust and got some suggestions.
Let's read them.
All right, let's come back from break and do some suggestions. Welcome back to the Brain Trust Podcast. We got some suggestions on the Brain Trust Discord. By the way, join it, hang out. We played Jackbox and it was very fun. It was very funny.
That was a good time.
Things that aren't on dice but should or shouldn't be. That's from Viditya Valetti.
Well, first let's start with things that are on dice, because I think that's a short list. It's numbers.
Body parts.
Rude
gestures.
I like a good interpretive dice, like story cubes or my art dice, or like, you know, just to some extent, I feel like the Star Wars Fantasy Flight dice have like their symbols mean things, but also
like hits or crits.
They could not mean things. Like you rolled a spiral, so now you have to explain what that is.
You got Book of Sod. Yeah, fudge dice, which is really hate saying that.
Yeah, not
fudge.
Not my fave.
I lived through fudge being a funny word, so Judy Blume shit.
I have some poker dice. I saw someone share that in the Discord today of like their D8s that have card values on each face. but I don't understand how they would work. Granted, I've not like tried or anything, but they were just one of those weird things that came up. I think my parents gave them to me, and then I was like, cool, they're just in my collection, they're in a bag, but I've never found a practical use for them. And part of that is I don't know how to play poker, or like, I don't really... We talked time about... No, I mean, I think I did at one point. The thing is, I don't understand the hierarchy of different combinations. And I think to be into poker, to some extent, you need to have that shit memorized. Like, it needs to be pretty deeply ingrained in you.
It's really easy. And from like a math... You're kind of like a math...
Yeah.
Math head. Mathlete. Wow, I was basically drilled on poker, and I never had to learn it. You know how some parents listen, like play, you know, Beethoven when a kid is in the womb?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, my parents played fucking poker all-stars. Okay, this is actually something I want to talk about because I currently am like finishing up the rules to Drawing Dead, this game that's going to be in Lucian Khan's Hibernation Games Anthology. And you play three different types of poker, five-card stud, Texas Hold'em, and blackjack. And I put in the rules, like, if you're not familiar with the rules for these, I don't have space to print them, so go check them out online and come back. Instead of saying, like, damn, you don't know how to do this? I don't know if this is the game for you. But even, like... hierarchically the different suits, so I'm going to give you two different card combinations and you tell me which one's worth more.
Okay
two of a kind, so two pairs, or
two of a kind and two pairs is
two different things. See, you do know more than two pairs or three of a kind.
I feel like three of a kind is statistically less likely, right?
Okay, Matt, there's the math coming in.
But is that true? Is that like it is?
It is true.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So the thing that gets me hung up, I think, is the poker terms of like a flush. I watched I Love You Man the other day. which was very funny, and there's a scene where they play poker, and there's the main character who like doesn't know what he has in his cards. He's just like playing cards as a social thing, and then there's these other characters who care a lot, and they're like, I can't believe you had straight with deuce pocket. Like, they have like lingo, right? And I'm like, this is completely meaningless. This is what it's like when game designers talk about diegesis. Like, you're kind of just talking and hear yourself talk at a certain point. And you,
right.
Showing off your vocab.
I was recently actually looking at, like, the Poker Association's style guide to see how to write everything. And you just have to communicate in such clear language because poker freaks will just say, like, pocket deuces, studs over aces. and then you're just like, I don't know what that means. Okay, so here's the tough ones. A flush of diamonds or a flush of spades? Do you know what flush is?
No.
All of the same suit. So all my cards are diamonds, doesn't matter the value, or all my cards are spades, doesn't matter the value.
I guess I feel my mind wants to say diamonds because it's money, but I feel like my heart says it's spades because spade is just like, I think, considered culturally more significant.
Diamonds rule everything around me. No, diamonds is higher. It goes hearts, diamonds, spades, and clubs.
On it descending? So hearts is the most valuable?
Yeah, hearts is the most valuable.
Mm.
Diamond second most, yeah, and so on. So the diamond flush is worth more. All right, we're running out. What's more, a straight or a full house?
A straight is all the cards in sequence, right? Like,
yeah.
3, 4, 5, 6.
Sequence of 5.
And what's the other? What was the other?
Full house, which is 1, 2 of a kind and 1, 3 of a kind.
I think a straight.
Yeah, straight's worth more. I think. Wait.
Now I don't know.
Full house. Wait. Straight. Oh, wait. Hold on. Shit. PokerNews.com. Updates.
Oh, I love when they update the rules to poker.
Patch notes. Full house is worth more.
What's the most expensive one?
A royal flush.
Which is?
Built out of hearts. So a 10 to ace.
Mm.
Okay, so I got one final one. What's worth more? Cat eyes or lime Ricky?
Now, this is the bullshit. This is... So I think a cat eyes... Well, cat eyes is a pair of something, because cats notoriously have 2 eyes. Mostly,
on average.
The average number is approaching 2. And what was the other one? A lime Ricky. A lime Ricky is like lime and soda water, right? Like that's... It's like a drink.
Yeah, they would get after church.
It's not an alcoholic drink. Yeah, I'll drink a lime Ricky any day.
Do you remember the like Arizona lime Rickies?
No.
I can't tell if this is a normal episode or the most boring shit we've ever talked
Absolutely
about.
Absolutely.
Fucking goddamn fucker podcast.
I feel like...
Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
Hey, let's do some patch notes for poker. Like, I know enough about poker, and you don't know
patch
a lot.
Notes for
like,
this show.
Or patch notes for the show. Have a better week. That patch note number one. Oh, the devs are going to try and make weeks better overall. Like, I got stuff to talk about, but I just want to hang out with Adam pretty much.
And I don't have stuff to talk about. And I do want to hang out, I think. Nothing personal. Nothing personal with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a weird...
I'm on pokernews.com.
Sure.
Let's see what we got. It just looks like shit. It's not interesting like Trucker Report, which is good. It's just like this could be a fake website. Jonathan Little uses Solver to examine classic Isildur bluff-catching hand.
Oh, I feel like that's worth noting. I hate games where you bluff.
Oh, fucking, you don't like bluff?
Fucking don't enjoy that at all. It's not fun to me. And I think
you always tell the truth.
I think that's probably the number one reason I don't know any poker things. It's because on entry level, I go, oh, I don't want to play that.
How do you feel about like social deduction?
My least favorite kind of game.
Okay. Are you familiar with Among Us?
Oh, I played a little bit Among Us in the Brain Trust when it first got hot, I feel like. It's funny, too, because there was a Jackbox game almost identical to Among Us that came out like a year prior. I remember playing that on Thanksgiving.
That game is great, honestly.
Yeah, I still don't like it because, again, I just don't like that style of game. But the Jackbox one is one of the more fun social deduction experiments that I've done.
Yeah. We've probably all had this experience when playing Among Us where someone brings in some energy from a previous round that is like spiteful and weird, and it makes it not fun instantly. Like if you can't like mentally refresh and get back in and earnestly play, you got no right sitting at the table with me and my crew.
Is that a thing that happens in poker?
I've never been in one of these poker games that lasts all night. That is like the most like foregone shit I could think of doing. No offense. But I would have to be very fucked up. I think that's why the whole deal is like you were just very drunk the whole time.
Yeah.
And smoking a giant cigar. Like you are basically locked in until the end of the stogie.
You committed the length of one cigar.
I like poker because finally there's an easy way to make money.
I know at least one person who became a pseudo professional poker player. Because they just got really good at the theory, I guess. They min-maxed their hands.
The Forge theory for poker. So you're going to want to go around your table and figure out which player is a gamist, a simulationist, and a narrativist.
You made role-playing with poker. So this is a thing, because we started with the suggestion was what goes on dice.
And we said, interesting. Interesting question.
I feel like role playing games that use poker are also sort of by extension not my thing.
You got Deadlands uses poker.
I was going to say it's a cowboy thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I tangentially,
Cowboys didn't even play poker. They played Faro, which is a totally different game. And it's just anyway.
I do like blackjack.
Blackjack's good.
And
that's the only like honest game. Like you have the best odds at a casino playing blackjack.
I think that of there is like weird math baggage in my head of like blackjack is something that you could there's a degree of skill to, and some of it's just math like statistics, and then obviously there's counting cards and stuff, but I like how blackjack works in a role-playing game because it feels like it mirrors this tension, like your character and your player both have this degree of tension at the same time that's executed in different ways versus rolling dice, which doesn't feel that way. There's tension, but the player doesn't have control. Like dice are random, but blackjack is a choice with random elements. So I do like it in games, and I know that there's a handful of role playing games that use it as a resolution mechanic. I did it in Hell Cabin 2, the lesser known of the Hell Cabins, the B side. There's also a game. Shit. There's like a haunted house game where the house is the dealer. And I think that's a good execution of it too, of like,
that's cool.
Having, and I want to say the house doesn't always win is also blackjack based. Do you know if that's true?
I'm not familiar with that game.
It's newer. And I haven't read it yet. It's like, it's too new for me. It's new enough that I haven't had the chance to engage with it, but
too hot off the presses, I cannot touch it without getting hurt.
I need my hands to cool down. I don't know. I'm distracted. What am I?
Strategy op-ed: why Hillmuth's limp strategy is bad for poker.
Have you ever seen an interview with or been privy at all to competitive rock, paper, scissors?
No.
This is a weird thing that I remember from my youth of seeing like a rock, paper, scissors
level shit.
Seeing a rock, paper, scissors champion as a guest on Conan O'Brien. And for whatever reason, I like retained that information. But a thing about it that I thought was interesting and unique is this person had said that they don't plan for their opponent at all. They just because the a thing about rock, paper, scissors, and this is sort of a mentality in roulette too, of like chasing numbers, but the actions that you take don't actually necessarily influence the thing right. that you're up against. So like the idea of in roulette, like you just had six odd numbers in a row, so the next one's going to be even. Statistically, that doesn't mean anything, and you're just kind of lying to yourself.
It's called ball fallacy.
But it's the same in rock, paper, scissors, where it's like you can either play offense or defense, but to some degree, it's randomized. Wait, how? I mean, you can't really. That's like the illusion in the same way of chasing numbers in roulette, right? Like you're either trying to plan for what you think they're going to throw, or you're throwing without planning for what you think they're going to throw. But this rock, paper, scissors champion says, I just go with a set list and I just throw them.
Wow, and that's cool.
So like they know before the match starts something like a certain number of throws that they're going to do. And they don't waver from the set list because that's chasing numbers, right? Like it's just a statistical chance.
That's beautiful.
And I think about it all the time. And there was names for the different combinations in a way, like you had the poker lingo. Like I remember Fistful of Dollars was two rocks and then a paper. Or maybe it was rock and two papers, but you know, the idea that the other person won't be able to react to it because there's no logic behind it. It's interesting. I don't remember why I brought it up.
No, it doesn't matter. This episode is someone, Alex Roberts said last week that this podcast is pure brain juice. I hope this is convincing everybody of the truth.
This is the pulp.
I love pulp, first of all. I'm pulpy. I played this game in my childhood where it was like rock, paper, scissors, in which you had three options. The options were protect, load, and shoot. Are you familiar with this?
No, I don't want to derail you. I have a thing about juice.
Okay, let's get into juice and we'll come back to protecting my load.
You're something about shooting. I'm taking notes so that we can.
Thank you for taking notes.
So we don't miss a tangent. A friend of mine tweeted this maybe 4 months ago, and I think about it every week. Do you think anyone's ever juiced a potato? Do you think anyone's ever taken a potato, put it through the juicer, and just drank a potato juice?
Isn't that how you get potato starch?
Is the juice or is the pulp the starch?
Okay.
Is the Kool-Aid man made of Kool-Aid or is that blood?
Is that blood or is that LCL fluid? I think if you put a potato through a juicer, it voids warranty.
The potato's wet.
Potato's wet on the inside. We're not talking about this. We all know onion wet. Are you considering potato wet?
It's really wet.
How is a potato wetter than a sweet potato?
And it's so dry on the outside.
It's way drier, seemingly. It's wetter than pumpkin, which is a hole of wetness.
I just am so curious, and like, I think on it, upon reading, I immediately recoiled and was like, drinking potato juice is fucked up. Kind of makes me want to throw up. Like just the idea of a glass of this cloudy potato juice.
We got to follow this. Do you have a potato in your home right now?
I don't think so.
Do you have some sweet potato?
Frozen hash browns.
Okay, I'm going to go get a potato. You better go get something and come back.
Do you have a juicer? We're going to talk about
it. No, I'm just going to hold it.
Like an apple? I'm just going to Google potato juice.
I'll be right back. Thank you. All right, I'm back.
So you're holding a potato?
I'm holding a russet potato and a sweet potato.
According to the article I'm currently reading, potatoes are about 80% water.
Jesus, doesn't look like it. It looks like it's 80% rock. Now, a sweet potato, I could believe, is 80% water.
Interesting, because a sweet potato, to me, is not wet anywhere.
Potato feels drier than sweet potato.
On the outside.
Yeah.
This article says that it retains a lot of its nutrient value when you juice a potato. It's very alkaline, which can help people with acid reflux. And it has vitamins such as C, B, potassium, iron, calcium, zinc, vitamin K.
It's got that CB.
I'm a little bit... I wish I didn't Google it. It's one of those things that was funnier in theory.
Yeah, I'm holding potatoes right now. Seb shot me a look. And,
yeah, okay. That's funny.
You know when a potato sprouts and it's like the scariest shit in the world?
Yeah.
That is some alien behavior. That is like proof that potatoes are from comets. Like, it sprouts and it's like, I'm trying to kill you. I'm working on killing you.
I'm making more potatoes. Come back soon.
Isn't something about, like, a sprouted potato toxic?
I've heard something like that. You're not supposed to eat it once it starts to propagate.
Sounds like a rumor started by the potato aliens.
I've definitely thrown away quite a lot of sprouting potatoes and onions because I thought you're not supposed to eat them once they sprout.
You're actually just supposed to eat the sprouts. Eat shoots and leaves. What are we going to do for 20 more minutes?
Shit.
Dice. What goes on dice?
Numbers. I like a die that has letters on them. I like the Scrabble dice, or what's it called? The Boggle dice would be fun to play something with.
Oh, yeah.
There's, you know, dice with pictures on them. Those are classic. Things that don't go on dice. And you know what's interesting, too, is like those are all, none of those take into consideration the faces, the die faces.
It's just the process of doing the dice.
Because I wonder if there's something to like fractal dice, like having a d20 where the result that you're using isn't just the single triangle face that is the most upright, but maybe like a spectrum, right? Like,
oh, you make a constellation of them.
Yeah. Oh, there's that game Before There Were Stars. That's like a fun, interesting storytelling thing. And it basically involves rolling a heap of D6s. And I think the pips are replaced with little stars. And then there are cards that are constellations, and you're trying to like place the dice from the common pool to make the constellations. But I like to what we did with Guide, or rather what you did, of having this like visual interpretation of die placement and how that can be a constellation that you as players infer to like,
right, yeah,
determine the shape of something. Especially like something spectral, like in the Phantoms. There's a lot of potential fun there. And I think too, there's the interpretive nature that I really like about a lot of role playing built into that, of saying like, wow, I kind of see that this is like this mound shape that has these tendrils. And now that inference is going to inform the next five scenes of role playing, because we decided our phantom is a plant that's growing like ivy,
and that's right, yeah,
that's something that came strictly from this visual data that doesn't take into consideration the numbers on the die faces or anything.
Yeah, and it allows you like just dump shit out of the letter. You took some notes on something we were supposed to talk about. The notes have failed.
You said
us.
There was a rock paper scissors game that was about shooting something.
Okay, yeah, so you get this rock, paper, scissors. It's half patty cake and half rock, paper, scissors. So it's a dexterity game, too.
A kit bash, so, yeah, okay.
It's a combo. So you tap your thighs twice, and then you either make an X on your chest to protect, make two guns in the air to load, or point two guns at your opponent to shoot. And you can't shoot before you load, and you can preload as many shots as you want.
But if you protect, then you can't be shot.
Yeah. So you do thigh smack twice, and then you play. You want to play?
Yes.
Should we turn on video for this?
No. That's why I said yes, and that's why I thought it would be funny. The idea of an audio-only game that only delivers information visually.
Okay, let's try. Let's try protect, okay? So, ready, set, go. Okay, I'm protected.
Okay.
Okay, now let's try load. Ready?
Yeah.
Ready, and...
I actually just shot because on the first turn when you protected, I loaded because...
I have been shot. I got shot. Hey, I thought you hated bluffing. You just hate being ruse. You hate the feeling of someone tricking you.
No,
and you love to trick.
In a hidden role game, I'm always the person who like talks so much nervously that it's clear that I'm the imposter.
Yeah, you know what's the key to any hidden role game?
Is to
no matter who the other person is saying, like, why are you talking like this? Like, why are you being so weird?
Yeah, actually, that probably would work.
And then everyone's just like, oh, shit. I have no idea how I just was just now. If I knew I was the only killer in the room and I said to somebody, why are you being so weird?
There's no comeback from that. You cannot explain to someone else your own behavior.
I'm being weird because I'm normal. Because I'm not the imposter.
Acting among us.
I got these two potatoes on my desk. I've been shot by my best friend.
Yeah, it's that kind of ep. That kind of ep. Do we have more suggestions from the Discord?
Yeah, let's see. Let's see what our more suggestions is. Low buy-ins, massive guarantees. Play for at least $100 million in May. Take your shot at poker glory.
You can play for at least $100 million? Like, how is it number going up?
So we got Ring Event 11, $400 Colossus. Ring Event 15, $400 Colossus. What is Colossus?
They're just making shit up.
You got Ring Event 16, $840 Bounty Hunters Championship. We got Ring Event 7 with Big 25. This shit is so weird. BeGamblingAware.com. Sorry, what was I doing? Helping the show? Okay, let's... I can't believe I was, like, wanted to talk to you about, like, we should do a Patreon for this show.
I mean, it's one of those things we talk about of, like, if we owed anyone anything, then this show wouldn't be what this show is.
Yeah, that's true.
We would have to really take a long look at our life.
Okay, we got Viditya also says, a world-building game that's played entirely through a grid-based combat system. Then Aaron King and Matt Fennell and Mike were talking about ActRaiser, which is that style of game. A world-building game using a grid. What about a Tetris world-building game?
Like Pangea, like you have pieces that represent aspects of the world in some way, whether they're geographical or thematic or something.
Pangea type shit. Yeah, like you're fitting together in these particular slots. You're building the tectonic plates.
I think it almost, well, I think a difficult aspect of that is then I'm thinking beyond geographical relationships. The physical placement of pieces has to matter, right? Like, if we're talking about conceptual, and maybe this is, you know, and I guess that's more world building than map making, which I'm kind of getting twisted on.
World building.
So we're like making a setting. So the spaces, the Tetris spaces, could be like districts. Or I think a lot of, like, when I first started playing fantasy games, for whatever reason, I would make all of my settings built on cities from like the 1920s. Cool. So like my D&D game that I ran for some friends for a while was like basically 1920s Chicago, and I had found all these old Chicago maps, and I had made the districts into like gang territories effectively. So yeah, the players could go anywhere. And I think you see this too in like open world games too, of like, oh, in Skyrim, like the School of Magic is up here, so that area is kind of like where a bunch of magicians chill. It informs more about the setting when you have districts. So I think in a Tetris style or a grid-based placement, the shape itself doesn't matter, because in Tetris, you know, you could have the U kind of shape, you could have a straight line, you could have a square.
The U.
It's like a, well, I guess it's not actually in Tetris, is it? It would be like a three. There's like the.
My eyes are wide open right now.
No, it's not a standard Tetris shape. There's the S
expansion.
There's the S. There's the little stout little like three with one on the top.
T.
But the idea that a district, I think this works really well with territories and stuff of. Is like they're not all squares, like, and this is true of a map too. When you look at a map of the United States and it has to warp around rivers and mountains and shit, it's not just all squares like Wyoming.
Yeah,
the idea that a district has to warp around these landmarks and stuff, and I think in a game where you have tiles, you would have to account for those or describe them. I'm also really interested because in Tetris, you can have vacant spots, like where pieces leave gaps, and how that would work in a game is interesting because a lack of information is its own information. Like, is that like, a body of water? About, is that a holy site or neutral zone? Like, you could prescribe that.
How about like literally playing a game of Tetris until you lose and then marking what the board looks like when it has clocked out and then building a like townscape based on this fucked up Tetris board that you lost on.
That's cool. Tetris also has color. I mean,
yeah, it's
unless you're playing on the TI-86 calculator, mm-hmm. Tetris itself still has like it's color so values and shape values. And there's not necessarily a mechanical benefit to color, right? Well, I think color might exist, like all the S pieces that face one way are all the same color. Is it? It's like that, right? Like all the long lines are always the same color.
I think so.
I think at least in modern Tetris, I actually have the dumbass Tetris app on my phone, and it's so bad, like pay-to-play. Loot crate kind of shit. I just want to play Tetris.
Get new skins.
Yeah,
so like Tetris, when you complete a board or like when you lose a game of Tetris and the thing is like maxed out, like do people understand what I'm saying when I say like a done game of Tetris? Like you have stacked, you've made a fatal error in your Tetris calculus. In the perfect world you've shown, is that the deck's stacked against you and you weren't fast enough to fix this little fucking little puzzle.
What's interesting about that too is almost every time when you lose Tetris, the bottom, you still have like a pretty strong, like dense network of cubes together. And then at the top, when you start to fuck up and get overwhelmed and it goes too fast and stuff, it gets really scattered. So you almost have innately this like coastline at the top and the more dense like city style placement at the bottom, just by virtue of how you play.
So we can take this Tetris board and do a couple things with it. Like what you're saying is having it be a bird's eye view of the world, but you could also have it be a cross section and you flip it upside down. So the bottom layer is just like the above ground city. And then everything below is mine shafts and weird underground like areas. So you make your like last bastion of humanity, like a Frostpunk kind of thing. And you just build right underground with this thing. Or otherwise, you could make it rising into the air like a bunch of tilty, weird skyscrapers. And you have like a vertical, you know, weird, fucked up city.
I dig it. I also like, as I mentioned, if all of the shapes of the same style are the same color, that only matters kind of in isolation. But as you play and you build, and shapes go next to one another, like you can have big clumps of, so like the shapes that you're reading, I guess, after the end, while they were made of the standard Tetris shapes in building, they're not that way most of the time in this like inference part. So you have sections that could be just like a 2x2 square grid that is very small. Or yeah, you could have these big ass clumps of like shapes that went together and kind of meld and turn into this big fucker shape. And that could be interesting. Yeah, then
you've built like, if you're doing the subterranean thing, it's just like you're doing a dungeon crawl or something, and that's a different faction underground. Or if it's the opposite, like it's going up into the air, this is like the people, the bird people that control like this roost over here.
There's a cool thing too in that everything is cubes, even the things that go together, like you still see the cube lines. So there's numerical values that can be assigned to the regions too. Like if you have a bunch of red cubes together and you, so it equals like 20 red things that are touching, then whatever value you assign to red, I think is innately like more powerful, has a consideration that's an additional value to infer from this same data set.
If you're doing it like an exploration thing and you say you're starting in that red area, because you're in a contiguous red area, say you just get to roll a D6 for each red block involved, and then you are able to like procedurally generate an encounter there or a place or people or anything like that.
I like now that I'm picturing like a Tetris crawl. Like switching
it from, is a Tetris crawl, yeah.
From color regions is like a new encounter or a new
variable. Yeah, and you need to like, you need to solve whatever thing, or like, you know, if you go, if you're in a color region of one or two, it's going to be pretty low on the D6 chart or something. So it's easy. But if you get into this like massive yellow snake world, it's going to be, yeah, it's going to take longer and be weirder and harder. So you're both like kind of playing Minesweeper and Tetris at the same time.
Is there an aspect of play where we can roleplay while we're playing Tetris?
Ooh.
Like, I mean, to some extent, there's deliberate city building, right? Like, oh, the next piece that's coming is this S shape, and I want to connect it to this other S shape to make this region more powerful, even though that might not benefit you in the game of Tetris. You know, that's like an interesting, I'm also picturing, I don't know if you never had this when you were in like math class where you'd have tessels and they're mostly triangles and and you know, you can make different shapes out of them. And for the most part, it was just like fun. I think it's supposed to teach you about area and geometry and shit, but really it was like, what's the most fucked up face you can make with six triangles? I think something like that works similarly well and might be a little bit, it would be more fun for me in a tactile way of like physically holding the shapes and orienting them. If you've ever seen, I feel like I need to Google the name of it before I say it because it might be dumb. I'm going to say shape cubes. Just not anything apparently when I Googled it.
Yeah, like, so say you're playing with this like the tassels or whatever. Tassels? I don't know. With tassels. Now you're playing with tassels. And instead of playing a digital game of Tetris, you are feeding other players Tetris blocks to come down. And so you are like playing a slow turn-based Tetris thing where you're drafting pieces.
So I just had two thoughts that are kind of tangential. One, when I searched shape cubes, a Rubik's cube came up, and I think,
hello,
this has, the computer that I'm recording on had a pop-up. The fuck? I'm not even online.
What is a pop-up?
Something about Flash being outdated. Rubik's cube would work the same way, and of having, you know, like clump based information delivery. The other is a
almost
game
as
that
good
I,
as fudge is
I like a lot. That's called Number Nine. That it's like a spatial puzzle strategy game. That there's the digits 0 through 9. Each one is made effectively of pixels, so they fit together on a rectangular grid. And your goal is to build upwards. So like the ground floor, you don't get any points for. And then you get points for the number tile and what level it is on above the first or above the ground floor. So through play, everyone is getting the numbers in the same sequence that's randomized by cards. But the way you arrange them is unique, and it adds a dimensionality to it. Like having X, Y, and Z axis is interesting.
Yeah.
But I could easily see, you know, getting three friends together with my number nine box and saying like, we're playing this instead using these pixels. So it has the same kind of Tetris energy and the random quality to it. But with everyone, instead of drafting, it's randomly coded. So like the idea that we could have a deck of cards in the middle, this could work with Tetris too, of saying, okay, now we each got the five squares in a row, like log piece. But what each of us does will innately be different or have different mechanical consequences to that. That's interesting and cool. Like tabletop Tetris, basically.
And then you're using it as a built area to explore in game.
Yeah, I like a little. Well, I'm in two minds of having it be something that emerges as you go. So like,
oh, yeah, that's cool.
Once you lay some tiles, you don't have the whole map at the start, but you reveal them as you go. That's interesting. But I also do like the, we have a finished Tetris map here and now we're assigning values to it. I think they're kind of two different games, which are both cool in their own right.
We did it.
Got their fucking A.
Wow. What a relief. I got these two potatoes on my table. PokerNews.com open.
We did. There's bead. I have this piece of art that's on my desk that I've been wanting to hang up and I can't figure out how. You know, when you were a kid, you might put like colored beads on a grid and then like iron them together so they melt into a thing. Does that sound like anything to you?
No, but that sounds cool.
Friend of mine.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, but I think it sounds neat.
Text you a picture because I don't know how to describe it. But a friend of mine who's a tattooer, she makes a traditional tattoo flash out of beads in this way. Like you have a board that's all these just little pegs and you put the beads around the pegs.
Oh, cool.
And then you use something hot to basically bond them all together. So I have what is effectively art generated by beads of a tiger and a snake fighting each other. It's really cool.
That's so cool.
But I'm looking at this as we're wrapping up this topic and seeing in it, like, wow, there's this really huge black area that's the back of the tiger with the stripes coming down and everything goes all the way down its tail. Like, that is a really large pixel region that then blends into brown and orange. There's a little bit, maybe too much color in this to be functional in the way that we're describing. Yeah. But this is another implementation of how you could do this sort of like pixel-based world building in a physical world. Right, you just
take a picture and then bit crush it.
Oh, I meant like drawing beads from a bag and ironing them together, but I think, yeah, what you're saying is making more sense.
But both of these are really cool methods of like, you're just making a gestural map out of... The thing with the beads is you're starting from nothing, and the thing with the picture is you are like downsampling this until it's unrecognizable.
Yeah, and I wonder too if like doing that in Photoshop, that sounds cool, like having a player, I mean, I was going to say like you use, like our dungeon is going to be this map and it's a picture I took of my cat, you know, like obfuscated yeah. into these values. But I also wonder if there's other games there too of like every player takes a selfie and does this process in turn to turn themselves into this pixel range. And then that's like your character build or something like that, you know, like. I like the digitizing thing. I was hung up on the physicality of cubes and yeah. thinking about this grid. I do like potentially just using a mosaic filter or bitmapping something so that it has such low fidelity that you're just nine different colored cubes.
So you build your map out of a downsampled picture, but you don't downsample it like to five colors. You make it like 18 colors or something. And then as players, you're adventuring on this like downsampled mosaic pixel map, but the way your class is built or whatever, you choose a picture and then downsample that much more. So it's only 3 pixels. And those are the things that you have your like specialty in. So like a red, an orange, and a yellow is yours because you did a picture of the sun or something. And on this like larger sampled mosaic with tons of colors, you have to work as a group to make it through each pixel to get to like a destination or something. You each have this like color competency.
Yeah. So I was just going to say that feels a little bit like how I pictured Aether Operations working of like, if we're wandering the meat realm, the meat manipulator is going to just have more knowledge about this. And the rules kind of encourage the GM to lean on the players in that way to be like, you're from here. Like, can you tell me how to get there? Or you know who the biggest motherfucker here is and why they want to kill you. So you tell me. I like the idea of like a grid base and be like, oh, these two players have red squares on their character sheets and we're going into like a reddish orange zone. So why don't they, and you know, this also works really well for GM lists of being like, this is now your prerogative because this most closely matches your character build.
Right. And as your character build, you can decide like, well, orange means that I like have a warm heart and yellow means that I have a cool clothes and the red is like I'm get angry sometimes or something. Right. And so your GM is a color wheel and the opposite color is something that you are like diametrically opposed to and you are like, when you come across that pixel, you are in trouble when you get there and you'll have to like, you know, strike a deal with another player who is a closer complementary color to that one.
Like purple. Like if you're red and you're going into a blue square, you hit up your purple friend and be like, I need help here.
Yeah.
Like purple is the liaison between these two oppositions.
And obviously we're talking about it at a really high level, like conceptually what this is. But if you just had this, like, you could theme it for anything, and this is just a like adversary and exploration tool. You know, you could have this be your psychedelic exploration thing, but you could also have this be like first day of middle school thing.
Yeah, like just navigating. I was going to say terrain, but it's not just, it's like emotional terrain.
Or yeah, conflict, social and I guess. Emotional and physical, yeah.
Yeah, there's a bunch of good shit on accident here.
You know what happens when we don't record every week is that we hit our stride 45 minutes in.
It takes a little bit longer. We're coming in cold.
Yeah.
But we did
it. Noted. All right, should we go?
Yeah.
Where can people find you?
I'm on worldchamp.io. That's it for now. I have stuff coming out this month, probably. I don't fucking know what I'm doing. More than normal.
Hell yeah. I'm Will. You can find me online. PokerNews.com/theplossus. I am the Plossus. Adam and I will be doing a Kickstarter this summer.
You heard it here first.
What the fuck's up with that?
Yeah, we gotta figure that shit out.
Damn. Also, I just went to doing games full-time. I'm -1 days away from doing it. I start tomorrow, which is yesterday now, so +1 days. But, yeah, this is going to be cool.
Going into maybe the fifth season of the Brain Trust now?
Yeah, this is, yeah.
Like, just... conceptually, like this is a new era.
That's true. We'll have to update our biographers about what's going on. Maybe, yeah, we'll, it's gonna get
new cover art that we said we were gonna do.
Yeah, let's do that. It's gonna get pretty
real sweaty.
It's gonna get weird and sweaty. Do we want to go ahead and theme the summer?
Maybe next week.
Next week we're gonna come with a theme of the summer. It's going to be something negative.
We'll just say the new season starts next week.
We're doing like season finale.
This is like the interstitial episodes. I think
this is the comic book tie-in.
Proper season ended like probably a month ago. We just didn't know. And then we have a few. These are like the deleted scenes kind of episodes.
Yes.
The next chapter is forthcoming. This is not part of any chapter. I think we're going to agree to that.
Yeah, this is non-canon. All right. Yeah, hang out in the Brain Trust Discord. It gains in strength every day, which is mystifying to me. I do not understand, and nor do I pretend to, any of the people that spend their precious time there and are so smart and say smart shit. It's cool. I'm just over here playing Electrosperm. All right. Brain emoji, handshake emoji.